The obstacles that interfere with the development of the bhakti. And so we wanted to look a little closer at those things that would help to make the bhakti steady, firm, that allows one to gradually develop sufficient ruchi and to prema. But I thought I would pause a little bit as we look a little closer at Srila Vishwanath's life. I was just listening to tapes this morning. Need some inspirations on some of the points. You know, it's interesting how each morning when we come, the first thing we do when we get up and we come to the morning program, and so our first activity is that we chant the Guruvastika prayers, the Samsara prayers. And so those Samsara prayers, they're also structured in such a way that we are praying to Guru, and then we are praying to Lord Chaitanya, and then to Krishna, and then of course we end as we make our prayers in the Sringadeva. So it's quite profound that during this most auspicious time, the Brahma Mamurta hour, that we try to capitalize and increase our devotion, intensify our devotion, etc. Well, these prayers are given to us by Srila Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur. He wrote over 40 books and so many different songs and prayers. When he was born, just the house just lit up with great effulgence. Just as sometimes we hear that when some very empowered demonic entity takes birth, it causes an influence in the atmosphere. It even causes earthquakes and hurricanes and tornadoes. Like now we're having more of these things happen. We realize that this is inauspicious. These kind of what people call natural but unnatural occurrences, the increase in such. And so we realize this has a lot to do with not only people's previously sinful activities, as we were discussing, but also their present sinful activities, that such inauspiciousness is taking place. So yesterday we were looking at past sins and then present sins. And then the seeds, the bijams and the kuta, the environment that cultivates the seeds. Pararabdha, or the sins that have already matured, and paraparabdha, those that are not quite matured yet. So when there's more and more simple stuff going on, then there's also a need for more presence of divinity. There's a need for more spiritual absorption, spiritual personalities to counteract so much of the stuff. And this is what we see very much exemplified in Srila Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur's life. Because, keep in mind, he became prominent at a very unusual time. Rupa Goswami, Jiva Goswami, Lord Chaitanya, they'd all been gone for some time. And just like in the time of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, when Vaishnavas were really, Vaishnava culture was quite in bad shape externally. Where in Bhaktivinoda's time, so much Sahajism was going on. And people were really looking down on what was considered to be the Vaishnava lifestyle and culture. Well, in another very devastating way, and one sense even more so, that Vrindavan had become a very sad place because the Muslim ruler, I think Aurangzeb or how you pronounce, he was such a demon in his regime that they were just literally slaughtering Vaishnavas. They were crashing temples, bashing, breaking temples down. They were destroying the deities. They were raping the women. They had seized the environment where they had blocked off, like passages, blocked off streets. Not only were they destroying and attacking, they were even monitoring who would come in, who would go, and they would steal or rob the deities if people were trying to get them out. So this was very, very hellish. I mean, just like sometimes people, they think, well, I'll just chant Hare Krishna, everything will be okay. Yes. But it doesn't say that there won't be any material difficulties to the individual as well as to the community, to the environment. But the ultimate outcome is always auspicious because, you know, Maya is never stronger than Krishna. But there are distinct times when Maya becomes extremely strong. This is, we're discussing about our Prabhupada coming and Prabhupada coming meetings and some things about, you know, self-sufficiency and community development and whatnot, and looking at what's going on in the planet now with the earth changes and the Y2K issues and all of these things. And we try to look how to secure things a little better in so many different ways. But it's necessary because the material world is the home of Maya. So imagine what it was like that later Śrīla Viṣṇunātha came to Vrindavan after all of this devastation, where he had been aware and hearing so much about the powerful preaching and acceleration and the big temple building and people converting and joining into Vaishnavas, philosophers defeating the rascals and impersonalists and the Mayavadis and Sahajiyas and whatnot. And then it comes to a place where people had to literally to hide because of how devastating that the regime was in Vrindavan itself. They had seized Vrindavan. So many of the primary deities had to be snuck out. They were taken to Jayapur, places like this where, you know, they would not be destroyed. So we may ask, why does Krishna allow demons to get so strong? Or people may even have doubt and think, well, if Krishna doesn't protect even his most holiest place, then what kind of God is this? But we must remind ourselves that the material body is designed so we can escape and get out of the body. This is an escape body, to have an escape out of the material world. And the material world is basically a range for people who want to forget Krishna to different extents. And so as Bhakti Siddhanta explains how it's not a place for a gentleman, of course, gentlewoman. It's not a place where one wants to tarry. The one should do their business and get out. Even to the extent that we see that as Kali Yuga becomes more and more dominant, that people get so sinful that not only do they have no desire to take to theism, but they even start hating and attacking and looking for and hunting people who are trying to propagate spirituality. So, who wants to stay around when things get that crazy when they're already, you know, quite intense? I got one email yesterday. The devotee was trying to do some things in France. And the French government, the Austrian government, they have declared our movement as a dangerous cult. And so, just doing little things, just trying to get license, just trying to get normal permits and things, that is almost impossible. Because the government is so vicious, the French government is so vicious, very demonic government. So it's made it so hard for devotees to try to preach. And even where we had certain permits, things are being taken away. And devotees go out for Harinam and things that they're liable to get, you know, attacked and things. As the government is encouraging such. So, one may think, well, why doesn't Krishna just wipe all that stuff away? Why doesn't he just check all of that? Why doesn't he just stop that? Well, this is the way the religionists will think, of course. They think that spiritual life just means how to be peaceful and how God is supposed to do all kind of stuff for your material gratifications. But you say, but they're not engaged in material gratification. They're trying to preach. They're trying to serve Krishna. Yes. And the greatest devotees trying to serve the Lord, they even undergo even more challenges and assaults and attacks, etc. Sometimes their lives are even threatened. But not only the Vaishnavas, anytime we see a prominent personality who has tried to propagate some aspect of religiosity with some sense of truthfulness, also undergo tremendous challenges and assaults. I mean, we know how Jesus was crucified at such a young age, that Muhammad was attempts of poison, several assassination attempts. Baha'u'llah, even up to today, the Muslim community still attack the Baha'is. You see, even the Mormons, they used to get put in jail, beat, attacked, women raped, so many things. That's why they went to settle, you know, to Utah. They were forced to chase them from one place to the next. They're a pretty advanced spiritual group. They worship Lord Brahma, ultimately. But there's some depth there to a certain extent. And we see how even just a philosopher like Socrates, because he was preaching something, ethics and personalism, but he was poisoned. Zoroaster was stabbed to death. Bodhisiddhanta, there were several attempts in trying to take his life. To the Prabhupada, even the time when he mentioned about some snakes being put into his bathroom, saying that this was some assault on his life. So, Vishwanath Chakravarti, he came in at the Vrindavan at a time when all this kind of chaos was like at its height. And so not only has the temples been, many of them been destroyed, deities that have been hide, hit, taken out, but even people could not so much openly, in many places, they could not even openly engage in worship. Just like with the devotees in Eastern Europe, how for many, many years they could not openly engage in any type of spiritual activities. But then out of that, some very powerful devotees developed. And at certain periods, we saw that so many were the largest number of devotees we have in the world. Western devotees are coming from these countries. Where there's intense demonicness because it's an environment that it's based on trying to throw out God, which is the way the communist environment was, is very sinful. So where there is great sin, then there is also this element of purity. So Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti the Kohit was encouraged by Mukunda Das, a very great associate of Lord Chaitanya, to try to help install the sanctity of Vaishnavism. And because he was not an ordinary person, obviously. He very, very, very studiously trained. There's this story about how he was a householder. And he was just always studying and absorbed and sharing and preaching about the Lord. That even when he was with his wife, once his spiritual master had to personally ask him to go back to be with his wife. And there's a famous story that he went and stayed just literally one day, one night. And just the whole time in the bed, he just preached Bhagavatam. In the morning, he left. Now, we should not try to imitate Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti. But, you know, he just left. And he had no interest in any type of sensual gratifications or alignment. So the spiritual master just honors the fact that his whole existence was just for Krishna and for propagating the mission in such ways. So this task was like overwhelming, because even for him to try to rejuvenate things, even his own life would be at risk. And what to say of all the divergent for types of philosophies that, you know, come out. When there are difficulties bring the best and the worst, you know, out of people. So he was praying himself very deeply to be able to do this and to get some help. So there's this very great devotee, Baladev Vrijabhusan, who was really one of the major scholars and leaders of the Madhvacharya Sampradaya. So the devotees, the Vaishnavas, they were very much sort of bewildered in anxiety about how to go about setting things straight. And they would often think how they need, or how wonderful it would be to have someone like Baladev Vrijabhusan, who could help preach the mission of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Because he was a very powerful scholar. Even today, the Madhvacharyas, they're great scholars. But at the same time, they do not honor Madhurya Ras. They do not accept Srimati Radharani. And so the one great devotee named Radha Damodar Swami, Goswami, he was very powerful in Gaudiya Vaishnava, and he went to preach to Baladeva Vrijabhusan. See, in those days, people were genuine scholars, and that they were really into knowledge, and some gyan and vigyan. But if someone presented some higher understanding, they would hear and they would accept and surrender to that person. So although they had very strong arguments, but they were arguing and they wanted to put the messages and philosophies on the table to see what philosophy seemed to or was able to be prominent or dominant. And so this was, you know, real brahmanas. They were not just into position, but they were into trying to be curious of the knowledge of the message. So when Radha Damodar Goswami, when he started speaking about the intricate aspects of Vaishnava alignment, honoring Srimati Radharani and Krishna, Lord Chaitanya, then he converted. And so later, Radha Damodar Goswami sent him to Vrindavan to join Srila Vishwanath. So Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti the court could understand how his prayers were being answered. That he was getting this very, very powerful pundit and devotee from the Madhavacharya Sampradaya to be able to team up with. And so here these two personalities had an awesome task in how to restore, you know, the Vaishnava Siddhanta. And there is, we jump ahead a little bit, but it's relevant. But later when, before Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti the Court left the planet, he was almost 70 years old, about 68 years old. And then there was this great challenge in Jayapur. And this challenge was that the king was making an offense by honoring the people, by honoring Radha and Krishna worship. That where in the scripture is there a mention of Srimati Radharani, of this cowherd girl? And Narayan, he is not to be, he's not associating with such. This is improper. And so, until they could prove this, they wanted the worship to be stopped. So the king, he was quite a Vaishnava, honoring, but he was confused and he had no way to defend the position. So they called for Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti the court to come and to explain the position of the Gaudiya Vaishnavas. So he had become quite old at this time. He traveled so far, his health was not good. So then he commissioned Valadev Vijayabhusan to go. He was like his shiksha guru. So Valadev, he met these scholars, these pundits, and he presented so many arguments. And he was defeating them. But then they brought up that you Gaudiyas, you are all under the shelter of Madhavacharya. And Madhavacharya honors Narayan as supreme. So where is your basis? And then they explain how there is no commentary. The Gaudiyas have no commentary on the Bhagavatam. On the Vedanta Sutra. So he explained that actually we use the Bhagavatam, and this is the natural commentary. But they were not satisfied with such. So then he had to leave in a very sad state. But then he was praying and praying like anything to Govindaji. And the deity literally appeared to him in dream. And the deity spoke to him and gave him the commentary. And so this very special commentary was presented to establish, because again the whole Vaishnava line of Gaudiyas was endangered, because all these great teachings of Lord Chaitanya and Madhavacharya and Jiva Goswami, Rupa Goswami, now it could be just put to the side and Radharani not on it. Radharani was literally taken away from the altar, unless it could be supported, defended. And of course, this is the position of Vaishnava scholars to examine and to try to understand the higher truths. So this is how powerful that Vishwanath Chakravarti's connection was, how he inspired Baladev Vijayabhusan, and what they did as a team. So much, the majority of Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita is connected with the commentaries of Vishwanath and Baladeva Vijayabhusan. So when we're reading so much of what Prabhupada has given us, we're reading what all of these great scholars have given us. This is how important they are, you know, in our own lives. And at a time when Srila Prabhupada was at
a great crisis, or let us say a great junction in his life. He sometimes explained how his inspiration, he became so inspired by reading some of the commentaries of Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti, where he explains how the order of one's spiritual master must be one's life and soul. And so when Prabhupada was reflecting on that, then he says how he then gave up everything and focused himself on the words of Bhaktisiddhanta by preaching in the West, taking sannyas, etc., etc. So they are very much integrally a part of our meditation, our history, and our existence. And this is, you know, very wonderful because we are so connected, you know, with such a wonderful heritage. And the things that we do can help us to do and play our parts as we honor this legacy. So we wanted to share a few other things. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti's guru had wanted him to make a copy of the Bhagavatam. See, now we have these printing presses and we have so many ways we can run off, you know, 100,000 copies of this and 50,000 copies and whatnot. We can translate the books in many, many different languages. So, but in the Goswami's time, they didn't have this. They were writing by hand. And so books were very, very valuable and very rare. But people would go through all kind of means to try to study such things. Now we have so many books available, we have to even, you know, we really have to take it serious. That now so many, many teachings are there, when in earlier times people did not have. Sometimes there may be only one copy of a certain work. So a lot of the great books, you know, some have been lost. And there's an effort on the part of a fund that Prabhupada established to try to save these, you know, these sacred scriptures. We had mentioned how it was famous that when he would be writing this the copy, how the sun would just effulgently make itself available for giving him light, and how even when it would rain, even during the heavy monsoon time, that it would not rain where he would be working. Once the king had come by, rain is so heavy with all kind of umbrellas and shelter, and he was shocked to see that where Vishwanatha Chakravarti was writing, that the rain was not coming down. It's the kind of potency that this great personality had, and the effect that he had on the environment, and how he was being blessed to do what he had to do, given the difficulties that he had to confront. One night he was in a cave, in Govardhan, and he was engaged in his writing and his bhajan, and he was reflecting more and more about how to carry out, you know, these difficult tasks. But he was enthusiastic, you know, to do what he could. So Lord Caitanya Mahaprabhu himself, he appeared and he requested him to write commentaries on the Goswami's works. Now, why was this important? The Goswamis, they wrote in very high, sophisticated Sanskrit. And even some of the pundits could not always follow them. So Lord Caitanya Mahaprabhu appeared specifically asking Vishwanath to write, but to write in such a way that more of the common people could be able to understand. So again, we see this great teamship amongst the servants of the Lord, and how different devotees have different types of commissions. And someone may think, well, books are already there. What's the need for any other people to do some writing? But now he was inspired to write, to be able to reach the common people. And so Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself personally appeared to be able to give him such an instruction. And of course, he honored that instruction. And so much of what he has given us in the world, with his over 40 books, is written in such a way that try to make things more available. But as we've been reading, it's still pretty complex. You know, the last few days of reading all of the different points, you know, that he's bringing up. But one just has to read it over a few times, and then it becomes, you know, a little easier to understand in such ways. So, once a very first-class brahmachari who had a very, very deep attachment to his deities. And this is real first-class deity service where his whole life was based on serving his deities. I mean, his singing was all for the deities. Eating was all for the deities. Wherever he go, whatever he did, everything was all always a concern of, what is the deities? How can I serve the deities? So, real pucker. Very surrendered. Anyway, his deity once appeared to him that he should be given over to Vishwanath. Now here we see two things very interesting. First we see how the brahmachari, being so dedicated to the deity, very attached, but very surrendered to whatever the deity wanted, he's ready to accommodate. So he went to Vishwanath Chakrabarti, and he explained how the deity had wanted to be presented to him. Because the deity stressed that there is this very, very special devotee of mine. And he wanted to be with him, to be served by him, to receive his love and give his love. So the brahmachari, he went to see Srila Vishwanath Chakrabarti. And he mentioned to him how the deity had requested that he be given over to him. And Srila Vishwanath was very humble and overwhelmed. He was not ready to honor, to accept the deity. He did not feel comfortable accepting this deity that was so dear to the brahmachari. And so he humbly requested not to take the deity. But then brahmachari took the deity back home. And the deity explained that deity appeared to the brahmachari, again in dream, in vision, and explained that no, he should be taken back to Srila Vishwanath. But that he would inspire Srila Vishwanath Chakrabarti to be able to understand and appreciate that it was his duty to receive the deity and to care for him. So it's like here Krishna appears with the Tanya in the cave, and gives him instructions about what he is to do. And then the Lord is, during his Archa Vigraha, is manifesting, coming forth to give him help. And here we see a situation where there's tremendous difficulty, but at the same time, how Krishna is really coming forward, very personally, to be able to assist his devotees in such ways. So Srila Vishwanath, he then also in a dream, the deity appeared and explained to him that why he was coming to him. And so he, of course, accepted the deity and it became one of his worshipful deities. And we say one because he also had another very special deity that he was honoring. That one very great Shashila that had been worshipped by Lord Chaitanya, by Raghunath Das, that had been worshipped by Mukunda Das, and also by very one powerful Mataji, Vaishnavi, named Krishnapriya Thakur, or Krishnapriya Dasi. So, this Srila was given to the Srila Vishwanath. And so he became the caretaker of Krishna appearing in these intimate ways. So here we see how Krishna's servant had a very powerful duty, responsibility, and difficult situation. And how Krishna himself so much came forward to, how Krishna appeared to be able to help him. So Krishna is appearing in Lord Chaitanya in the cave, in Govardhan Hill. Krishna is appearing in his brahmacharya deity. His brahmacharya was so serious, Krishna's presence was so dominant in his deity form. And then that deity, being so much taken care of, is being offered to Srila Vishwanath. Srila Vishwanath to take care of the deity so that this deity can help to guide and inspire and protect Srila Vishwanath. So this was extremely powerful. So, this devotee, Krishnapriya Thakurani, mentioned something about her because it goes along and helps us tomorrow when we continue on with reading some the Bhakti Trilogy. As we were discussing yesterday about the aparats, about the fences concerning the anarthas. And we were discussing about the kind of things that can check the devotion. And so, of course, we understand how the anarthas can check. And we were talking in one level of even when someone is engaged in the devotional process, and there's these anibrities. And we're discussing how the greed, puja, apatistha, the desire for fame, adoration, how one can go be so much evolved and still have trouble. So, we'll share this with you and then we'll maybe stop because everybody's leaving or going to sleep, so I don't know what's happening. I don't know what's going on. But I assume I should give a short class today. So you'll hear that all around the world when they send this tape to other places. The Nagari devotees, they just go to sleep. This devotee, Krishnapriya Devidasi, she also, just like Srila Vishwanath Thakur, the Chakrabarti Thakur, she had literally no interest in material energy, material culture. She was always absorbed in hearing and chanting and speaking, and people were very eager to have her darshan. So she's the one who gave this Srila to Vishwanath. So he has the Srila from her, and he has the deity from this Brahmachari, Uttana Mahababu, appearing, giving him instructions. He's being guided by Mukunda. So much blessings were there. You see, when somebody has something important to do, Krishna arranges to facilitate a particular person. Now, there's something very special about her life, because it helps us to see the danger in making offenses, and how they can really destroy one's devotion. So, once is very also powerful devotee, Rupa Kaviraj, who had also had Mukunda Das Association and had been trained up many of the great Vaishnavas, been to many of the sacred pilgrimage places, reading scripture like anything, and spoke scripture like, no one could believe. So, once he was about to give Bhagavatam class, and this Thakurani came in, Krishnapriya Dasi. And so when she came in, then so many of the Vaishnavas, they stopped to honor her because they knew of her as a very, very great personality. So, Rupa Kaviraj, he did not only did he not recognize her and honor her, but he was actually disturbed. And so he just went on and then started doing his Bhagavatam presentation. So now as he was speaking from the Bhagavatam, he noticed that her mouth was moving. And he saw that, oh, she is chanting while I'm speaking. So at one point, he became so disturbed that he just stopped speaking. He just stopped speaking altogether. And then he called her out. How can you do two things at the same time? Here Bhagavatam is being spoken, and at the same time, you are chanting. So she took a very interesting, humble position, of course. She's a great Vaishnava. And she explained that it is not that I am so much constantly doing this, but my lips are always moving. The holy name is always coming out. This is my habit. That wherever I'm at, whatever I'm doing, the holy name is always coming out. So then Rupa Kaviraj, he got even more angry. He was furious. And he looked at her with disgust and hate. And so at that instance, all of his lustre and potency just went away, just like birds flying off a tree. He kept on speaking. And after a short time, he started concocting all kinds of strange ideas. Now, he was very powerful and very famous. And so as he started speaking distorted philosophy, many people joined him. Because here he was a person who had been so much in connection with great sadhus, had such knowledge of the scripture. But because he offended such a great devotee, that even though Rupa Kaviraj was experiencing some symptoms, some obvious symptoms of love of God, he lost it all. He started explaining that there is no need for kirtan, there is no need for shravana, there's no need for hearing and chanting. There's no need for japa. He explained that there's only a need for smaranam, only for remembering. Just remember Krishna. And that's all. He started looking down at those who engage in rules, regulations, and strictness. He saw it as only as neophytes. So, amazing how someone, another thing he started preaching is that only renunciate can be a guru. Even though people like Srinivas and Advaita, they were all householders, grihastas, and they had disciples. But because he was a sannyasi, a renunciate, so he started preaching, distorting the philosophy in unusual ways, he actually became a sahajya. And his mentality was such that later he went to his guru, his own guru, did not honor him or accept him. And then he got extremely sick. Not only did he get sick, he got leprosy. Very classical heavy disease for heavy offenders we see in earlier times. And literally his limbs just started rotting off. And he died a horrible death. Now we should think about that. It shows just how serious it is when somebody makes an offense and it doesn't matter who they are. First, the most highest level pure devotee never makes an offense. This is what we were describing yesterday about almost greed of
almost freed of Aeonarth is completely free, etc. Different categories. And so he was at that point of almost freed. But he was actually genuinely experiencing genuine symptoms of love of God. He's one of the top philosophers of that time. He had traveled all the sacred pilgrimage places, had maximum association with these great associates of Mahaprabhu. But because he was caught up somewhat still in pratishtha of appreciating his greatness, that when Krishna Priya Thakurani came in, he could not honor another great person or someone or recognize somebody who was even greater than himself. And so he was so much angry that she was being honored, and even more angry that she was not seemingly listening to him, and she was chanting, and therefore he thought and spoke bad. And so at that point, credits that he had, they were wiped away. And what interesting about his life, because he died a horrible life, stinking, annoying so much, being so much, and then just seeing your body rot away, and Vaishnavas shunning you. Well, he became a ghost. He was not even able to take on another body right away. But he began to do wonderful service in the sense that whenever in that area any Vaishnava was offended, they would be haunted by him. And so when someone started getting haunted, they know about the danger of aparads, the danger of offenses. We see three things, and then I'll open for questions. I'll start the reading tomorrow, next section. That Vishwanath Chakravarti wrote over 40 books, so many songs, our samsara prayers we sing, our morning prayers, it's written by him. He's helping us to focus our minds and our devotion. That he was brought to help by Lord Caitanya's mercy at a time when Vrindavan had become totally in shambles. Temples destroyed, women being raped, sadhus being killed, deities being destroyed, etc. And he had a task of somehow trying to revive such. So he did not fear from such, but just intensely prayed to the Lord for help. Baladev Vijayabhusan, who was then leading of the Madhava, of those under the Madhavacharya Sampradaya, and the devotees were just thinking how wonderful it would be if they had someone like him to help in the commission of trying to reinstall the position of Mahaprabhu and his great and what his great servants had given. And then Radha Damodara Goswami converted him by just preaching to him, arguing philosophical points, and showing him the super excellence of the Gaudiya Siddhanta. So he teamed up with Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, and then they did so many writings and so much philosophical discourses to help to enthuse the devotees and to steer things in such a powerful way. And even to the point of Baladeva Vijayabhusan writing the commentary on the Vedanta Sutra, which really helped to give the Gaudiya an actual place where it could not be questioned as such. So, in Prabhupada's own writings, so much including the purports, the commentaries from these great personalities. So as we have Srila Prabhupada, we have all of these great persons who he's connected with, that he's sharing with us in this powerful way. Then we see how Vishwanath Chakravarti was given the deity by this very Vaipaka Brahmachari, with so much affection and love for the deity. And the deity so mercifully asked to be given to Vishwanath. So here he has this wonderful deity, that he took care of his life, and then he was giving the Shila that was being passed down from Raghunath and from so many other great personalities, Mukunda, and now Krishna, Priya, who had it last before she gave it to him. So much distortion. And one of the things that Vishwanath Chakravarti also did is that he had to counteract Rupa Kaviraj's distorted philosophy that had entered into the minds of so many Vaishnavas. So here he had to deal with the Muslims who had become so viciously attacking the Vaishnavas. He had to revitalize the faith and give direction to the Vaishnava sadhus. He had to deal with the caste, the philosophies of the caste brahmanas, who were so much into elitism, and then to deal with the mayavadis and worse, the sahadiyas, even those who were in his own camp, who had become a deviant, like Rupa Kaviraj, due to his offenses. So we see the power that when there's great attacks, great chance to call upon Krishna. We also see the mercy that Krishna is there, but difficulties can come about. It says we try to arrange things for security and other things, we realize at the end, it depends on Krishna. On our first day discussion, one must work as if everything depends on him or herself, but at the same time, be ultimately detached, knowing that it's all based on Krishna. This is how Bhakti Devi surfaces. We must do as if it depends on us, but at the same time, we must have that humility in knowing how can we do anything? How can we undergo these great challenges unless Krishna's mercy comes through? But at the same time, we have this fixedness, determination. He wasn't thinking, this is insurmountable. I mean, after all, Rupa Jiva Goswami, they establishes all of these things. If it's been destroyed, what hope is there for me to try to reestablish it? He wasn't thinking that, well, let's let this work, wait for somebody else. I'll just kind of, be in my bhajan kutir and, do a little writing and praying, and that's it. No, because he did a lot of writing, but he went out to do the necessary. And he intensely prayed for help. And because of such, then he gets one of the top scholars of the time, Baladev, to join him. And by all ordinary schemes, there's no chance that this top scholar of Madhvacharya Sampradaya would leave and then become a great proponent for Nrsimha Mahaprabhu. And he continued until he left his body sometime later. And his samadhi is there now with Narottam Das and Lokanath and others. So one can even today go and have darshan and see if there's samadhi. So this is the great Vishwanath Chakravarti that we are reading, just one of his works. So as we hear more about him, about his works, we can have a greater appreciation for what he is, what his connection is with our Sampradaya, and a better understanding of how Srila Prabhupada so much given us not only his own ecstasies and realizations in alignment with his guru, but with so many, many other wonderful great acharyas. And last we see, of course, the serious precariousness or danger in making offenses. So here, Rupa Kaviraj, instead of being able to really join up with Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti and help with that effort, became like an ardent enemy. And how he then started preaching his bogus philosophy. Because of that, one is given much, much is expected, and he suffered so intensely, he got leprosy, his body rotted, and he became a ghost. And then his actions became like to help to remind others about the danger of aparads, so that when other people commit aparads, they would be haunted by him. became his service for some time. So many, many times when some big person or some situation creates an embarrassment or one falls, we just trace to see what the apparatus are, and in time one will be able to see, because these things that can cause problems. And that's why it's also dangerous for devotees who sometimes are pretty scholarly. They're more offensive to others because they have a condescending mood. Think, oh, this person is just kind of Vaishya, this one is just kind of like this, like that. I am Brahman. It's a very dangerous position. We see so many of Prabhupada's top scholars, they blooped. Even to the point that they started translating Sanskrit and doing things, and they started questioning Srila Prabhupada, started doubting him. And after a short time, you know, they're out there now. Some of them now, they're university professors teaching Sanskrit, teaching Indology, comparative religion. You know, almost a half a dozen of them were some of our top scholars in our movement. But if we make our bhakti gyan, you know, our meal becomes gyan instead of really honoring of the bhakti, then there'll be a problem. And one way to notice is that how much of one's knowledge is one becoming humbled by it? How much of one's knowledge is one becoming appreciative of all the different aspects of bhakti? And if not, then one could be in danger. It's like this Rupa Kaviraj. He was a genuine, powerful scholar and pundit. But then we see what his actual fate was. So we must do these things in the sense of humility and always use the knowledge to help us to be better servants, and realize that we can analyze how much we become a servant by how much we're really unconditional. This Brahmachari, he was a powerful servant. So when the deity asked him to give the deity over to someone else, he didn't hesitate. There was no procrastination. I mean, that which was the most dear to him, he was ready to completely honor it, because he was genuinely serving with his in total existence. And so, therefore, he was like eager to carry out any order of his lordship. So this is the real Sutta Bhakti. It's not so easy to grab or to catch up with, because we have so much self-centered concerns that we call devotion. We have so much Mishra Bhakti, mixed Bhakti. And this is why these sort of readings are important, because it can help us to just look closer and see where we're really at. Then to know what work we have to do to come to the unmotivated phase or unmotivated platform. And help us to see that in spite of whatever the dangers or the challenges are, then one can even be more excited, because the more the challenges, then the more Krishna will come to. If we do, like Srila Vishwanath did, went into intense prayer. Just like once he was trying to figure out about the Karma Gayatri, and he was hearing and reflecting on Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj's commentary. Lord Chaitanya explains that the Karma Gayatri is 24 and a half syllables. You see the Gayatri Mantra. But he is fixed in understanding that it's 25 syllables. And so he was very disturbed by this. He was a real pundit. He wanted clarity and understanding to be able to honor and to serve based on what the Siddhanta is. So he could not figure it out. And so he went into praying and fasting. He's ready to fast to death, actually. And then Srimati Radharani, she appeared. It's amazing what happens in his life. But the Tanya appears, the deity appears, he gets the Govardhan Shila, Krishna appears in this way to him, he gets the association of Baladev, Vijayabhusan, Vakunda Das, who was associated with Lord Chaitanya. Difficult task, more and more mercy. So, in Srimati Radharani, she appeared herself, and she explained to him that Krishnadas Kaviraj was actually right. And she gave a very esoteric explanation of why. And so then he, of course, was very happy and was able to go on and to wrote his amazing commentaries on these things also. So where there is this intensity, Krishna will come forward again and again and again. But there must be such intensity with concomitant humility and appreciation of the Vaishnavas and the task at hand. When all these things are not together, then, as Rupa Kaviraj even comes to the point of being able to have some of the symptoms of love of God, almost fixed on the prema stage, get that close just to become a ghost. Spiritual life is very serious, very powerful. It must be done in the right way. So we read these stories, we hear about these pastimes, we study the scripture, and we can see through the eyes of the scripture, and then we can know what is what. Hare Krishna. Any questions or any comments?
Thank you very much. I've had this book for a while, so it's nice that you chose this book to talk on, because it's helped me to really get into it a lot deeper. You spoke yesterday about the power of living in the holy dharma, and today you spoke about offenses. So I was just a little disturbed about an incident that I heard that happened in a temple in Vrindavan, and how some devotees were physically attacked in front of the deities. So I'm wondering if this kind of situation goes unchecked, does it actually affect the whole movement? It's not just an incident that happened then, it has nothing to do with us. It actually affects the whole movement?
That effect is already affected. These kind of things are just symptoms of a disease. It's like you see a symptom. You say, well, the symptom, would it bring the disease? The symptom is just showing that a disease is there. A disease is already there. You know, there are deeper issues. The whole thing is being studied now by the executive committee. So the executive committee will study it to see just exactly what happened and what the details are. And the different reports. But still, the basis is that offenses have happened in the holy dharma. Well, the basic understanding is that here, one of the most holiest places, where there should be such a great exhilaration about spreading the devotion, is helping us to realize how much Kali Yuga is prevalent, and how much, if we don't rise above and develop higher consciousness, once you become a part of all this other crazy stuff that's going on, within the material environment. See, the thing is not so much right or wrong all the time. It's that how to serve and how to help. It's not, well, who really was more responsible? What's responsible is that if women, it's like if children, if your child is crying, then you have a duty to facilitate that child. If women are disturbed and men are supposed to protect them, then the problem is that the men must see how they can protect. The fact that the women there are feeling some anxiety, or some of them feeling some anxiety that they're not getting a chance, or they have darshan, or feeling some anxiety that they're in the back, then if we are looking at that properly as leaders, we don't even have to deal with all of the details. But we deal with the fact that if those you're supposed to be caring for, if they are not happy, they are not satisfied, they're not feeling loved, they're not feeling protected, then that's an issue of itself that cannot, be gotten around. And therefore there must be arranges to look at that closer and to see why those who are to be protected are feeling so unprotected. And then you go into the details, this thing, that thing, that thing. But there's a deeper thing that's there. And the deeper thing is that, leadership really has to look at itself and to analyze that one of the more important things in leadership is Sabasakina Obama to the people under you are supposed to feel happy. Supposed to feel secure, satisfied. That doesn't make people happy about sense gratification, but they should feel a sense of happiness and protection that whatever's going on is for their well being. So what has happened is really a deeper disease, a deeper problem, is that there's so much dissatisfaction. So it's like if you got dissatisfaction, you got anxiety towards someone. And so maybe they leave a broom in front of you in the doorway and you trip it over it. And so you get so angry. But really, what's just that broom that you're already angry because of something that happened or somewhere you feel bad? And something just sparks it off. Some catalyst happens that then causes a certain type of action and a certain type of expression. So this incident is just something that sparked a general feeling of anxiety, disturbance, or sparked a general feeling of people who sometimes use Vaishnav culture for casteism, for racism, for elitism. So these are the things that always goes on in the material world. And people bring, and we're reading so nice about this, people bring stuff from their previous lives. They bring stuff from this life. And they shared it to different degrees. Some people shared fast because they're more serious. Some people shared slow. And so one can study the scripture to see in their own life how much they are moving ahead, where they're stuck at. And so these things are quite clear. So it's very interesting to see how this kind of unfolds. If, in fact, people just start looking at it more and more, and well, the men, they created a line that blocked the women. Women tried to push through it. Therefore, just women being feminists and trying to push, why should they be pushing? And therefore, it's their fault. Or people looking at it and thinking, why did they act in that way at that time? But it's a whole level of consciousness that's funky. It has to be, has to be addressed. And when people don't, then Krishna will smash them, especially in the holy realms. So if people know what is to be done and they don't do it, then Krishna will help them and give them their love in a hard way, etc. In that sense. But the biggest thing is that when so many people are dissatisfied, it's a sign that there has to be greater attention to dealing with what's causing the general atmosphere of dissatisfaction. And so you have it on three ways. You take the Gurukula kids as an example. Because the Bhagavatam tells us, women, cows, elderly, Brahmins, he makes it very clear. They're not taking care of what the results are. So why are we having problems with the cows in this place, like here? We're having problems with the kids in here, having problems in these situations. These are all things that are described in Bhagavatam that must, in fact, be addressed. But then you have Gurukula kids who are very dissatisfied because they feel that they were kind of forsaken. Their parents were so much engaged in the mission, they didn't have time to take care of them. Send them off to schools, and so they felt, some ongoing disturbance because of that. You have kids who were in that category, and on top of that, they were abused. You have some kids who parents, they sent them away, but they had, good experiences in association with others, children, with good teachers, etc. And they're going on. You have kids who had difficulties, and they have somehow weathered them, and they're going on. You have some kids who had difficulties, and they are bitter as anything. You have some kids who didn't have any personal difficulties, but their life isn't going right, and they are furious. So you have all of those things. You have some people who just, based on the stuff in their own life, their own personality, that they've been somewhat of a failure. And so the idea is they take it out on others, or they scapegoat. And so you have that. But you have others who've had some genuine issues, and the problem is there. We have the same thing in all the ashrams. We have the same thing that's happening also with the women. We have some women who have given their blood to this movement. And so many of these temples wouldn't even be here if they didn't raise the funds and help to see that it happened. Because in so many, many of our financial things, women brought in much more funds than the men. We have some mothers who gave so much, and then they feel so disturbed. And many reasons. Some cases they got a husband. It just didn't work out. You know, whatever the situation was, many, many variables based on that. Some cases their own fault, but they pursued a certain connection. Other cases, it was arranged and it wasn't properly arranged. Other cases, just by the nature of, karma, that they don't have a karma for healthy marriage. Some people, it doesn't matter how many counselors you go to, how many books you read, you just don't have the karma that you're going to have a very pleasant marriage. I mean, some people, maybe that's the case. Right? So, I mean, just like in the case of Mr. Nasrani, he didn't have the karma for a successful marriage. And so, while he was married, he just could not get into it. And so, later he left. So, you have this. And so you have people who are writing and jumping on this as a way to justify their own existence. They're in Maya. And now they got a campaign that they can just and say, well, Maya here, Maya here, Maya here, Maya here. And so therefore, my Maya is not so bad. Because all this other Maya is why I'm like this. We got a lot of people in our movement like that. Men as well as women. Many people into the Rhythmic thing and other things. Their lives have been somewhat disappointed. And they're not really honoring what Prabhupada has given. And so they want to find a million reasons to point at to show why what they're doing now is justified. They're smoking dope. They're doing this, doing that. They're breaking almost everything except they're maybe vegetarians. And so, from time to time, they feel guilty. They're bothered because they know so much. So then they say, yes, it's because of these gurus. And so they put everything based on gurus has caused my suffering. Or they base it on this thing, that thing. And so there are some people who are jumping in, and that's the issue. So they use different issues. And then there are others who their karma factor is there, and they're disappointed in their lives. And others who genuinely had some problems. And they see, oh, here's another instance of this same kind of problem. And so it's all of this stuff that goes on. But it's very simply resolved when we consider we are servants of each other. And the persons we're trying to serve, if they're having a problem with something, then we should sit down, hear it, and see how to create a situation where the problem is not there or where they're not feeling insecure. But the question is, to what degree people do that, or what degree are people going to get on campaigns and just try to throw philosophy at each other, try to justify this or justify that? Or to what degree other people on the sidelines will jump into that, which is also another interesting kind of distraction to a certain extent. But interesting to see, how this thing, actually develops. But it's just another interesting thing in Krishna consciousness for people to come forward with more devotion or to be exposed about their mixed devotion, or for people to come forward and to see how to make the family stronger, or for people to engage in fragmenting the family. Krishna arranged all of this, so it has to be there for people to be qualified to see what are they really made of. I mean, we say many times, any crisis, it brings the worst and the best out of anybody. You see the best coming out of people when there's a crisis. And you also see the worst. You see. Let you see where people are really at in such a way. Any other questions? But we see from the example of Rupa Kaviraj, what offenses do. Offenses will wipe out your devotion, will stagnate you. Even if you come to the point where you're gradually experiencing the ecstasy, where you're experiencing some distinct connections that you enter into prema, that offenses are there, can become, become a ghost. It's like what happened. Feeling the way we deal with Vaishnavas is really important. It's so much of what our existence is about. You just want to watch the history of someone, their growth, their stagnation, their failure. You just watch and see how they treat Vaishnavas. And it'll become real clear what's going on, you know, in their life and why certain things have happened. Any other questions? Mm-hmm.
I'm curious to know something more of what was the resolution of this problem of supporting the worship of Srimati Radharani through Shastra.
What was the resolution?
Right.
In terms of the conclusion was that they accepted it. He, you know, explains many scriptures where Radharani is being mentioned. And I don't know, you know, all those scriptures. But he explained the different scriptures and showed the esoteric aspect and explained how, just like how Sukadev, that if he would have really gotten into discussing about Srimati Radharani, that him being such a bhakta of Radharani, he would have went into trance, he wouldn't have been able to finish, being able to speak to Maharaj Pariksit. And so he went on explaining many, many different things that Baladev, because he knew the scripture, could understand that, oh, there's a deeper meaning to this. And he honored such. One of our scholars would have to deal with that. There's a lot of good scriptures that he explained. Yes?
Distress, and you just mentioned now about really understanding how there are certain emotions that mask the really underlying symptoms. And I think as devotees, as we mature, if we want to mature and want to advance, we really have to stop and try to analyze what's going on with us, you know, day to day. Because I find with myself that anger tends to mask a lot of the other emotions that I am experiencing. If I take a moment to like really go beyond that, I can get to the root of the problem and then start solving it and start working with other devotees to work out what's going on and have a much more pleasant time. But I think like that, if we just stay on the surface, then we never really are going to accomplish much. But we have to, each as individuals, take responsibility to look and see what's really underlying those are the things that we do.
The whole process of bhakti is that just to stop the gross things, that's really only a beginning. You know, we stop taking intoxication, this is sex, drugs, gambling, meat eating. That's just the initial. Then the real work is then looking at these subtler things. And that's where the real progress or stagnation takes place, based on how much we're dealing with these more subtle types of things. And that's why I was explaining about the importance of the seed, you know. You stop the sinful action, but if the seed's desires are still too strong, they're going to surface in different ways. Some situations, conditions, is going to cause then the surfacing of the sinful thing again. So we get it from the top, and we go deep, and try to get this, the whole mental and willing connection away, so that we destroy the subtle stuff. But again, we do that by replacement. Param just in the body. We have to do it by pushing out the nations, by bringing in more of the devotion. That's what we're going to be discussing more tomorrow. That science of how to push one out, bring the other in. If we're not bringing the other in, then certain things happen, and what we get just comes out. You see. That's why it's a little dangerous sometimes getting in these kind of, in the center of some of these arguments, because people are posturing and almost like waiting for something to jump on. And so as this is examined more and more, you're going to find that there are issues on both sides. But still, the major issue comes on the men, because it's the men's duty to protect. And the fact that the women are dissatisfied, supposed to be protected, is a sign that leadership isn't properly helping them to feel secure. But what you'll find is that there are people who are having some issues that's been going on there for some time, and they're carrying a chip on the shoulder. And then something happens, and then you know the tension, you know, sets in such ways. Then the other aspect, which is a little
more difficult to deal with. It has to be analyzed. That there's a cultural aspect also. Is that there's just a natural mood that's more ingrained in Indian girls in contrast to what's ingrained in Western girls. And Prabhupada honored both. He understood that as he came to the West and he studied for a while, that there was certain needs to adjust certain things. And so where somebody may not understand time, place, and circumstance, you know, may have a big problem in trying to work in and function in an international movement. You see. And so that has to be done. Because like one of the arguments that's going on now is that some of the Western women are saying one thing, any women are saying something different. You see. And it's not only from what happened, but also from their own orientation. You see. But we are not a unilateral society. We are a cosmopolitan society. And so we have to be able to preach and to do things where we honor the Siddhanta, but where at the same time we are able to adjust some of the details so that in fact that the preaching spirit goes on. The other thing devotees have to kind of accept more is that Prabhupada was not ultimately concerned with being Vedic. And sometimes our conservatives, they always throw that up. This is not Vedic, it's not Vedic. Prabhupada was concerned about what will help, what is Krishna conscious. Then the conservative, real fundamentalists, they just throw up Vedic, 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 Vedic. And they quote from the, you know, the Manu Samhita. But if they want to be honest, the Manu Samhita says that they shouldn't even be devotees. Huh? The Manu Samhita says Malechas and Janalas, etc., cannot even be devotees. So if they want to honor the Manu Samhita, some of the things that the Manu Samhita says, then they have to first honor that they have no right even to speak, even to exist. Because Manu Samhita has some heavy stuff. I mean, there's certain things that work based on so many other variables being in place. When those variables aren't, then it's a different matter. See, the whole idea of women being protected, the same as like children. So you can exploit that. So children being protected, now you do what you want to with them, you abuse them, incest, etc., with the idea you're supposed to oversee. But if we see that no, it's supposed you're supposed to have the obligation to be the servant, to provide and to take care. And so if we see women as like Lakshmi, then you realize Lakshmi is very valuable. It should not be flaunted around. It's something sacred. It should be cared for. It should be protected, etc. But there is a certain contingent of women in the movement who are very dissatisfied. It's like in this secular society, women who are very dissatisfied for all kinds of reasons. If you look at the secular feminist movement, you find women in it from all different reasons. And so many women who were in the feminist movement have gotten out because they're finding so many people who are in that stuff, they got their own agendas. And so a lot of women who honestly realize that the chauvinism and the exploitation of women is a genuine thing, they jump out of those groups because they realize these women are often more exploitive in their own ways than even some of the men. Because you bring all different types of people. Where there's a justified cause, people bring in their own mentalities in such ways. So that can happen with us also, you know, in that sense. And that's why we even have now, it's a fringe group, but we have gays for Vaishnavism or something, you know. There's some one or two groups that are like that, you know. You know, people find ways to have their own agenda in such ways. But again, as we said, when we say once you call the Rudra's child prayers, we're emphasizing that we must honor all Vaishnavas, all generations, all genders, you know. not that we make some type of sectarianism, whatever it may happen to be. Any other questions? What about the name? Somebody has, no, please go ahead. You have a question? Come next.
I was wondering if one's life is saturated with offenses and with sins, like we saw with this devotee who, just by committing this one sin, they have to take a ghost body. How does one who similarly has so many offenses that they've made, so many sinful things, how do they, is it inevitable that they're going to just have to suffer severely, or is there some way to break the cycle and reform one's life?
Yeah, we discussed this part of this yesterday, is why one must approach the person or persons who they have offended. And they must genuinely beg for forgiveness. And that by chanting the holy name, it helps one to be freed, but one must simultaneously approach the offender and to ask, for forgiveness. Prayaschitta, regret, repentance, and desire to change, the will is there, the desire is there, but then it must be in accordance with speech and the actions. And so we have to make the adjustment. So we have to go back and we have to beg forgiveness. And by such, then we sort of clear some of the negative karmic reaction from what we have done. And then we go on. But see, the difficulty is that if somebody thinks they are not offending, or if somebody doesn't honor others' existences or see them as valuable, then even when they do something harsh, they don't even see it as offensive. They see it as the opposite. They think, that they are God's blessing, to the environment. Or they feel that they were totally right in what they did. And if anything, they're angry that others don't recognize that they were right. Humility is very essential in devotional service. I mean, it's like one of the issues with that Vrindavan thing is that they're saying that the way the women work, when the sannyasis come to offer obeisances, they can't come to the Krishna's altar because the women are all there. But, the question is, when somebody is eager to see the Lord, I mean, why would we get so disturbed by that? And if somehow a sannyasi is coming and some of the women are there and they are not moving, then there's one, you get into a big rage, concerning them. My people, trying to see the Lord, Where there's a proper mood, where people are satisfied, naturally, if your father comes and he's trying to see something, you move and you let him see, you come back and see. If your daughter's trying to see, you're happy. So what is the issue? Your father is trying to come, or your big brother is trying to come, or your uncle is trying to come to see something. No problem. You look at it, he looks at it. If he wants to look like this, if she wants to look like it, what is the problem? You say, oh, niece, get away. I'm looking now. You get away. Auntie, get away. Huh? Okay. You put things on the level of a family. And then you all of these things they're not so complex. But then it is complex because so many devotees don't even know what family is. You see, that makes it hard. So many people now in modern day society don't know what proper family life is. Because they haven't experienced it within their own immediate family. They didn't experience it with their parents. And in some cases, they didn't even experience it with their grandparents. And so they don't really understand what it really means to have that kind of unity and diversity within a family. And that makes it hard.
That makes it hard for a lot of the marriages to be successful. When so many people are from backgrounds where the marriage was unsuccessful. They're very powerful statistics. That if you're a mother and father that are divorced, the tendency chance that you will become divorced, something like 4 or 5 times, more likely that you'll get divorced also. You can say that's kind of karmic also. But it's a socialization factor. When you see success, it consciously and unconsciously gives you the idea of success. When you see failure, that it has an unusual way to impinge upon your consciousness. And even sometimes when you're trying to avoid it, it's the most thing you're trying to avoid. It just becomes a meditation and a mantra, and it's exactly what you wind up in. There's so many young girls who were coming from families where the father was an alcoholic, was a drunkard. He was obnoxious. And as much as that girl suffered in that environment, is distressed by that environment, she winds up marrying a husband just like her father. Because he's so much not wanting that, that becomes a mantra, that becomes a part of the consciousness, as he literally draws something similar. You see. No, it's relationship is a very serious thing. This is why what we do with our children now is so important. What all of us do that they pick up on is extremely important. Because we're either going to give them strength, or we're going to send a message of failure. And where there is a weakness, we must be sure to try to compensate. The kids basically need male and female connection. And so if we have children, we don't have male image, we don't have a husband, then it's important that some of our men are actually having good role models so that it can impinge upon the kids' music consciousness. Because it's not just, in any sense, just what the mother or father or the father or mother does. Those are the most dominant, but it's what we all do that adds up to what that child experiences. And a lot of these dysfunctional things that keep cropping up in the movement goes way back before people even join the movement. It goes way back to certain socializations and patterns that they have brought in, and to a certain extent haven't been able to fully, to eradicate it, because the bhakti hasn't become strong enough to be able to check, so many of these things. Any last question? That it's insurmountable. It just means that it's definitely going to be more difficult. If you had a father, you had mother who somehow just wasn't there for you, it's going to be very difficult to be free of the abandoned type of consciousness. It's going to constantly come up in your life. You're going to constantly feel that, you're being abandoned. And even little things are going to cause you to feel you're being forsaken and you're being abandoned. So one can rise above that, but it'll be a little hard. But one can rise above such. Yes.
I just want to thank you so much for these classes. They've been incredibly inspiring and definitely heart awakening to try to grab a little closer to bhakti. I was appreciating the comment you should have made about anger and how sometimes this anger is there. It's laying there dormant, some little bit dormant, but it's there and things bring it out. And as a representative of the women's ministry, I guess I just needed a point of clarification, because I've been trying to avoid, maybe not avoid, but I've been too busy to try to talk about this issue or even deal with the Vrindavan situation. I was a little bit amazed when you should have mentioned something, because I was thinking, oh no, devotees are reading all this stuff on the email or whatever. But I guess I was wondering, I'm aware that there are a lot of women in our movement that have been abused in so many ways, materially speaking. For example, lots of women that have come to our movement have been sexually abused. They've been raped. They've been abused by their whatever, their fathers, whatever. And there is so much anger that's there.
One third of every woman in America, the statistics say, has experienced rape.
And it seems like a lot of them have.
I just said just how pervasive it is in within the culture.
Yeah, and it seems like a lot of them are in our movement. So I guess I was wondering, given that there are a lot of rape victims in our movement, and that a lot of women are angry from these experiences.
I don't think there's any statistics or any situation that shows that we have more people being raped in our movement. So, I mean, heaven forbid. But that this stuff goes on. And it goes on so dominantly when the mood is selfishness, when the mood is lack of caring. It goes on very, very dominantly when there's this sort of autocraticness where people feel that they can lord over what they survey. So this is happening in schools, happening in companies, it's happening all over the place that are mainly dominated by men. When men are in a dominant position, if there's not the proper consciousness, then the idea is to enjoy and to experience and to lord over whatever is, you know, is in their care. And so that, you know, I mean, it's like you have this thing in Washington that when many times women go for a job for a secretary, sometimes it's right out, you know, they're being interviewed, they're being asked about the hours they can work and the weekends and whatnot. It's almost like they're being interviewed as for a secretary, you know, rather than a secretary. And if you talk to some of the women in these professional positions, you find out how much, weekly, that they have to deal with improper things, you know, coming from their supervisors. This is all a part of, you know, material life. But one would expect that, yes, that's material life, but we shouldn't see so much signs of this within the spiritual community.
That the women are raped here in our movement, but that they come from a material background, many, and have been raped outside of the material world, and then they come to Krishna consciousness, perhaps trying to cover whatever pain they may have had from that experience. And then they're faced with different types of situations, like the one that is going on in Vrindavan. And I was wondering how to be sensitive enough to assist some of the ladies to understand that, yes, some of the anger from those experiences is still there, but at the same time, you know, try to address the situation. Because my tendency is to just stay out of it and not respond to it. But I know that as somebody that's supposed to be a representative, that devotees may be wondering, well, she's just not even saying anything. She's not even taking a stand one way or another. So how to best just respond in a very caring way on all levels?
Well, there's many, many things within that question. First thing is that everybody who's in a material body is, as Vishwanath Chakravarti is saying, is bringing in some packages. Everybody's bringing in something from previous life, and it's all different types of things. And some things before we join the movement. So that's all of us, men, women, children. The early experiences that we have, they have some impression on what our present personality is. Where we perceive and codify things, you know, they have some impression. So we all have to constantly deal with trying to counteract certain patterns that's based on conditioning. Some cases it's more distinct or more distracting than in other cases, but everybody has that. So that's a struggle that each person is having, and we deal with it in different ways. That is what conditioning means. And in terms of any type of argument, this one or other types of things that's going on, that we kind of have to go beyond the point of talking, and we have to act. See, people can't so much
talked themselves out of things they've acted themselves into. And so, if one gets too much caught up in this kind of talking back and forth about so much stuff, it kind of takes away from the ability to be able to act and see differently. Kind of have to act more and in the proper ways and let that prevail and let that help and let that, exist. Because by the fact that we're in this communication age now, that communication is just so-called communication. It's just so accessible that people are thinking this or saying this or writing this. And so that's good, but that's also dangerous. Like now you can do all your shopping, everything on the web. You can do, you can find any information. You don't even have to go to the library hardly anymore. You can just, do things on the, on the internet. Now that's wonderful. But it's also crazy because now any ridiculous person can put something out and immediately it can go to thousands of people. This is one of the things that FBI are also afraid about. When the new millennium starts. They're afraid that some people are just going to put some crazy stuff, out on the web. It's going to cause panic. And some people are going to do that. Or now, I was just reading, just 2 days ago, some very intelligent hacker has created a virus that you don't even have to download. You don't even have to. I mean, it's just like when you just turn your computer on. It's like turn it on, you get the virus. So they're just finding more and more ways just to sabotage. That, it's not that you just, you can connect with something else and then they'll warn you, don't download this file, Don't do this, do this. But now they've found a way. And they've found there's a, there's a weakness, in the way that Microsoft is functioning. So they're warning people, be very careful. Because now, just turn it on, you can lose everything. Your computer can be destroyed. You see? So, and this is kind of a message for our devotees also. Some of our devotees also on the internet a lot now. You be careful. Because you got all kind of people who just do nothing but just vomit, on the internet. Just put any kind of trash about anything, I mean, I had some time back, somebody had put out that I had went to Alachua, had fallen down with two women, had two or three women, they went to the authorities. The authorities were aware of it. I was now wearing white, and I was trying to decide which of the women I was going to marry. Unbelievable. And I came to Ratiatra, and somebody says, "Oh, you're still in Saffron." I said, "What are you talking about?" And then the GBC had to ask me and then the Jumana Swami to write something on the internet, let people know that we hadn't gotten married. It was just that serious. You see, the Ritviks had put out a whole thing. Yes, and the Jumana Maharaj, myself, I think Hiranyananda Goswami, that we had all gotten married and were thinking of getting married. And so they put out, just see, here these gurus, even these guys, look, now they're getting married. They're like this, like that. And so it became such a rumor and people were accepting because, people put anything out. And there are people who just want to immerse themselves in nonsense, or they're defeated in their own life. They want to see other failure, or they're so eager to hear the Brahma Katha rather than Krishna Katha. So one has to be careful. So then some of Jayapataka's disciples in Bangalore, who were pushing this Ritvik thing, they were confronting him and others like this. And so then he and others had to ask me and a few others, look, please, put out right on the internet what your situation is. Because people are thinking that this is actually true. I mean, when I first heard it, I thought, why should I even give any credence to even trying to respond to such crazy stuff? But then I realized that there's some innocent people who may think that it was true. Or some people who may take such thing and then make some offenses, and I said, okay. So I sent a little short message that I am very happily absorbed in my sannyas ashram. I think it's one of the greatest things I ever did was take sannyas life. And I'm sorry that if somebody wants to see me live differently, but that's their issue and not mine. So, you do have to be careful because there is some venomous stuff that people are sometimes doing. And the communication age makes many things more wonderful to hear about and to know about. Devotees can share all kind of ideas. But also, one person can just create just such a dilemma. Just, you know, a few taps on the computer, and they send something, you know, all over. Free form, they send it to this conference, to that conference. They send it. Okay. A little late. Any last thing? But this is why I really hope that our devotees and the projects that we really, you know, just try to honor all the ashrams in a genuine sense. At the same time, that we are fixed in our ashrams. I mean, the brahmacharis should stay brahmacharis, those who are ready to live like that. And those who are married should honor the marriage, you know, nicely. And take care of their devotional life as well as their material responsibilities. And if we don't take care of all of these things, then we will also become very disgruntled and disappointed and feel very stagnated in so many different ways, etc. And we'll be even more depressed when, if we can't maintain a greater sense of devotion in our own life and within the community, then we'll be really fried when we put all this time into our children, and then when your child gets 16 or so, you know, she runs off in a miniskirt with some biker, and you call and you say, "Well, what's going on?" She says, "Oh, how do you go, mother? I'm on my way to Las Vegas. Got a job in the casino. It's really fun." She said, "Well, you know, I'll be back, John Masney." You say, "Well, what are you doing? Who are you with? I mean, how are you living?" She said, "Oh, no problem. I mean, I got a real nice partner. He's about 35 years old, and he's rich, and, I mean, he's wonderful. He's 16 years old." And you think, what happened? How did this come about? You see. And don't think it can't happen to you. It happened to so many others. If we don't have an environment that's sufficiently real, then the children will see this as something cynical, and they will act differently, almost out of spite. Huh? They will act differently. So we shouldn't put ourselves, put our kids, you know, in that situation where, as we all know, that now some of our own kids are trying to sue the movement because they are, you know, they're angry, disturbed. So even with them, we can't talk them out of some of the stuff that they're feeling. But we have to act in a way that many of them will see, oh, so Krishna consciousness can work, it is happening. And like any other organization, there's many different types of people, and they just have to seek out, you know, the people that they feel comfortable with. You know. So, ISKCON founder Chad, his divine grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Tira Prabhupada ki, C.C. Radha Damodara Radha Kalasari Jagannath Baladev Subhadra Goni Thai ki. Yeah.